Nightlife with Sarah McDonald on ABC Radio.
In most faiths, religious scriptures, we're asked to repent for our sins and forgive those who hurt or offend us. But how easy is it to do this? Is learning how to forgive a really important life lesson? Or are some actions simply unforgivable? And what about large-scale crimes against humanity, things like the Holocaust, Rwanda, the Mile Creek Massacre, for instance? Is that different? Joining us to discuss this tonight is Patria King. She's a regular on Nightlife. We haven't spoken to her for a while, but she's back. Patria is the CEO and founder of the Quest for Life Centre in Bundanine, New South Wales, and the author of many books, including Your Life Matters. Welcome back, Patria.
Hi, Sarah. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you back. And theologian and Anglican minister, Reverend James Mulheron, joins us as well from our Melbourne studio. Hello, Chris.
Hi there, Sarah. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for coming on. So forgiveness is a really incredible complex process, and it's been debated in philosophical discourse for millennia. Patria, what's your understanding of what forgiveness actually is?
I think forgiveness is an internal process for many people. It's often not about the other person or the event or the situation. We don't have to have them agree that they hurt us in order for us to forgive. It can be an inner process whereby we're no longer affected by the wounds that happened in the past.
They don't need to ask for forgiveness.
No.
Then,
you don't need to have the other person involved at all. Half the time, people who may have wounded you are completely oblivious to the fact that they have hurt you, or wouldn't care if they had, or certainly if a government department or, you know, some other entity that might have wounded you probably don't care that you feel wounded. So that can leave you in a very stuck position if you need the other person or the institution to agree with you that you were right and they were wrong. So for me, that's has no final kind of resolution. But for me, forgiveness is an inner process whereby we release ourselves from the consequences of having felt wounded in the past. So we no longer continue to react in the present as if we're carrying any hurt or any wound from the past. Mm-hmm. That's a liberation.
So it's a deeply personal act.
Yes.
And process.
Doesn't have to be, but it certainly can be.
Yeah. Chris, most religions speak of forgiveness, don't they?
Yes, I think they do. Certainly the three big monotheistic religions, yes.
And in terms of Christianity, is forgiveness a duty for Christians? It's such a central part of the faith.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's a duty based in our relationship with God who created us, and it's about mending relationships. Relationships with God and relationships with other people. And I would agree with a lot of what Patria said before. It is about our attitudes and the things that we do, and we often forgive people who don't even know they're being forgiven or haven't asked for forgiveness. Mm. But I would, as from a Christian perspective, I would root it in the primary relationship with the Creator.
So we can forgive as God has forgiven us, you mean?
Yes, I think you're quoting the Bible there. Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
It doesn't happen every day. So in terms of that, what would you say is the purpose of forgiveness?
The purpose of forgiveness is mending relationships. And it's effectively the only way of mending relationships, because relationships inevitably don't work as they should, because once again, speaking from a Christian perspective, we live in a world that we might call a fallen world, a world that is not perfect. And the most important thing in this world is relationships with the Creator, with other people, and those relationships are not perfect. And then the question becomes, how can those relationships be mended? Mm. And they get mended through forgiveness, primarily through God forgiving us. And as you say, then forgiving other people. I guess I would differ from what Patria said. I don't think it's about forgiving yourself. I would call that coming to accept certain things about yourself. but forgiveness from a Christian perspective isn't something you do to yourself or for yourself. You forgive others.
But what if they don't even know that they need forgiving or they haven't asked for forgiveness?
Well, you can still effectively release someone by forgiving them, and then the healing comes to you. It obviously doesn't affect them. It's a healing process for you, but it's based on the recognition that somebody has done something wrong. Whether they know they've done something wrong, whether they admit they've done something wrong, whether they ask for forgiveness or not, may make it easier or harder to forgive. It's certainly a lot easier to forgive somebody who begs you for forgiveness and recognises wrongdoing. But in other cases, people simply don't do that. And in order to go forward, we still need to forgive them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think what Chris is saying too is if you hang on to the rage, if you hang on to the anger of being wronged, then, well, for a start, it impacts your health because your stress levels are up, and so you've got a lot more cortisone and adrenaline circulating in your body, which harms you. So to not forgive is almost like taking poison and hoping the other person dies because you're the one who's stewing in your juices. Mm. If you don't forgive, you're left with this terrible impact on your health, on your quality of life, because it takes an enlargement of the heart to forgive. It involves growth. It involves growing into a larger, more humane, and perhaps Chris might think of more divine sense of things, to be able to enlarge your heart to no longer carry the burden of anger and resentment or planning revenge. I know many years ago I was in a little town that where there had been a lot of grief. A lot of people had died from a whole mixture. This was a little tiny country town. A young father had been killed. A toddler had fallen off the back of a truck. Someone had tried to beat the train at the crossing. And people often leave diagnoses of illness too late out in the bush. And I was sitting on a pile of hay bales, and we laid down the guidelines for our time together about confidentiality and listening and not judging and staying with how we feel rather than what we think. And the first man stood up under a large Akubra hat, and he said in front of 200 of his community, and the policeman was present, that he'd been planning the murder of the policeman for the last 2 years because his daughter had died, and he'd rung the police, and it had taken 2 hours for the policeman, who this man knew the policeman from since he was a boy, it took him 2 hours to come out to the farm.
Oh my gosh.
And by the time he got there, he was absolutely enraged. Where was this man? And here he is with his little daughter. And, you know, he said, "Where were you? Why, how come?" And he said, "Look, she was already dead. I mean, there was not a rush, and I had to pick my daughter up from school." And so instead of being able to go into the grief and the trauma, what compounded it then was that the police had to ask certain questions to ensure that what had happened to the daughter was an accident. Mm. And the fact that this man, whom they'd known each other for all the lifetime of the policeman, was even contemplating in any way that he could be involved in his own daughter's death, just enraged him. And it wasn't until he had the courage to verbalise that out loud, and they ended up weeping in each other's arms.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the policeman was just stumbling through his own inadequacies to know what to say to another father whose daughter had died. And he'd just stumbled out some silly remark of, you know, "Well, she was already dead, so what's the hurry?" And it completely lacked compassion, but he was stumbling and no doubt.
So it's recognising the imperfections of each other, which Chris mentioned about recognising imperfections.
Exactly, but the man was then able to, you know, they wept in each other's arms and both united in that moment and let go the terrible trauma that had happened. And indeed, that enabled him to actually begin the grief for his daughter, because in a circumstance like that, it's very common for the person to shift their pain and their agony of loss into rage against someone or something as a way of deflecting all of that energy onto someone that you can hold responsible.
So it blocks grief.
It blocks grief, where you feel far more helpless and powerless when you're overwhelmed with your own anguish and your own tears. And having rage is something that feels much stronger. And he'd literally been lying awake at night planning the murder of this policeman and would be able to make it look like an accident.
Okay, and now, not in that instance, right? Not in that instance, definitely not in that instance. But sometimes rage and anger can be useful. It can help us, you know, fight for against injustice and fight for a change in the law. And, you know, the anger you can see around the Grenfell fire in London of the failings of the local community and this possible material that was on the building that wasn't right. Sometimes we need to use that rage and anger
indeed,
and not forgive straight away. So how do we work out when we forgive and how we channel that just often justified anger about when we've been wronged? And I'll go to you, Chris, as well on this.
Yes, look, it's the rage and the anger is absolutely justified, but you don't have to change a law, change something fundamental in society because it needs to be changed through the means of anger. By all means, express the anger, and oftentimes anger is just the bodyguard of sadness anyway. So if you express the anger, behind that there are always tears. There's the tears of the awful grief. You know, imagine people were on the telephone talking to someone and then they just hear the crackling of the fire. And I mean, this is an agonizing thing for people to experience. And it's entirely appropriate to feel angry, but then we don't want to get stuck in the anger. And I've known many people who've dealt with the anger. They've wept the tears that lie behind that rage and then have gone on to change a law, to change fundamental things, not from a place of rage, but just because it's the right thing to do.
You're on Nightlife, Sarah McDonald with you, and we're talking about forgiveness. Patria King is the familiar voice you probably know and have heard before, CEO and founder of the Quest for Life Centre. And Dr. Chris Mulheron is with me, Anglican minister and theologian. Chris, have you heard some powerful stories of forgiveness amongst people that you've seen capable of great acts of forgiveness?
I think the most powerful story of forgiveness that I know is one that I preach on often, and probably a story that many people know too. The story from Luke chapter 15, where there is a man who has two sons. The one son treats his father badly. In fact, wishes his father were dead, goes off to a far-off country after claiming his inheritance. And the other son theoretically does everything right. He's the good son, if you like. And we have this contrast between these two sons. And the younger son, you know, we often call him the prodigal son, comes home. When he comes home, he ought to be beaten. He ought to be kicked out of the family. You simply don't try and come home under those circumstances. And then his father does this most extraordinary act of forgiveness. His father acts in a way that no self-respecting Middle Eastern man of the village would have done at the time. He runs down the street and he welcomes his son back. Rather than rejecting his son, who has effectively rejected him and the family, he welcomes his son back. And the son was going to say to his father, Father, I've sinned against you. Please take me back as one of your hired servants. And the interesting thing is that the son comes back to his father and he says, Father, I've sinned against you. And he doesn't say, take me back as one of your hired servants, because he realizes that the relationship can only be mended not by working for his father, but rather by accepting his father's forgiveness. And in that, the relationship is mended. It doesn't mean that the younger son didn't do all those things, wasn't in the wrong, but the relationship is mended because the younger son accepts what the father offers, which is forgiveness. And that's a way of acting that the older son in the story simply doesn't get. And Jesus tells this story to highlight the attitude of those who just don't get that forgiveness thing.
The older son can't forgive the younger son because he's feeling wronged as well.
Well, he's feeling wronged as well, but also he's a legalist. He thinks that the way for everything to work well is to obey the rules, and he doesn't realise that even in obeying the rules, he is disrespecting his father. I won't go into it all. You'll have to read Luke chapter 15, but no, it's a profound story.
A huge and important story of the Bible. We're talking about forgiveness on Nightline. And if you want to tell a story of when you have been capable of forgiveness and what it's meant for you and done for you, we'd love to hear your contribution on the show. 1300 800 222 is the number. 0467 922 702 is my text line if you'd like to share a story about forgiveness, or perhaps you can ask Patria or Chris a question as well, because that's most welcome. You up for that, you two?
No, sure. Of course.
Why not? I mean, Patria, a lot of what you mentioned is forgiveness is good for the forgiver. It stops the rage and the anger and the hanging on to the thoughts of ill will and hatred, which are bad for us physically. But I suppose in Buddhism and Hinduism, the notions of forgiveness are about not being bad for us mentally as well, aren't they, and spiritually?
Absolutely, because, you know, if you remain in that, trapped in that lack of forgiveness, then you're forever telling yourself this story over and over again of the wounding that you've experienced. And whilst ever you do that, you make your world a very small and bitter world, ultimately. And some people never get past it. They use it almost as an excuse for the rest of time, that this thing happened and therefore I can no longer have a full and rich and loving life because I was so wounded by whatever it was. It does require that opening of the heart and the willingness to see beyond. I mean, we often talk about it's second nature for us to judge other people. It's second nature for us to see people as more than us, less than us, better than us, worse than us. But no one ever questions, well, what's your first nature? You know, what was essential in you before you took on the limitations, the rage, the anxieties, the beliefs that you cling to now? And for me, the journey in life is to relinquish everything that's become second nature to us so that we reveal and experience and live from that essential nature. And in that essential nature, which I believe resides in all people, that's where goodness and humour and wisdom and spontaneity and insight and intuition and creativity, all those juicy, fabulous qualities that we love to have in our life, and we squander our connection to those qualities the moment we're caught up in telling ourselves that same story where we feel wrongly done by, and we tell it to ourselves over and over again. And, you know, what we do when you're doing that from a neuroplastic perspective is you're just laying down a neuronal pathway in your brain that becomes a super highway because you keep telling yourself this same story of being wrong.
So it can get harder with time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think makes it harder? I mean, I was saying before perhaps it gets easier with time, but Patria's just then said how the act of forgiveness can get harder with time because we get trapped into the anger and the same thoughts.
Yeah, I guess forgiveness can become a habit or not become a habit. That's certainly part of what human beings are, aren't they?
I wonder if one act makes it easier for the next and so on.
Oh, I think so, definitely. I think forgiveness is something we can all practice all and indeed need to practice, whether it's someone who cut you off in the traffic or or someone who did a more substantial wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people cutting people off in the traffic is an area where we often don't see a lot of forgiveness. We seem to let ourselves off the hook there.
What on earth good can that do, really?
Well, I don't know. If we forgave, we wouldn't get ourselves so revved up, Patria's talking about. I guess in our family, we've got a number of sons, and we've tried to encourage our sons to simply even sometimes just go through the motions, even if they don't feel like it. Just practice saying the real words. You know, there are lots of words you can use that are not quite, I forgive you, not quite, please forgive me. You know, they can say soz instead of I'm sorry I did that.
Forgiveness in those, training wheels, sods.
That's
love
right.
It. Give us another right. one. That's great.
Or whoops. Or there's lots of ways of not quite saying sorry.
That reminds me of the Fonz in that show, Happy Days. He could never say sorry. He was like, because he was too cool, right?
Some people find it really very
Some people find it extraordinarily difficult
to say, I am sorry about anything, because however they've grown up, they had this deep need. They have to be right. They have to be on top. So saying sorry is very, very
challenging. So you need to feel compassion for them and understanding. You're not capable of that. I forgive you anyway. Look, there's some calls coming in. Do you two like to take some calls?
Sure.
Tony's on the line. Hello, Tony. Let's see if this works now. Tony.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You got your radio turned down?
Yes, I have.
Oh, good. Now, tell us your story. You're involved in a car accident.
Yeah, I was at work and I'm a police officer and we were driving along and unfortunately the driver misjudged a corner and everything like that. And I had serious injuries. Like I had 16 broken bones after the incident. And everyone at work and everyone, my family and that, just automatically took a distrust and a dislike to the driver of the vehicle because it was his fault. But I could never dislike him, and he said sorry, but I always said, you don't have to say sorry, it was just an accident. And it opened up so many more doors for me later on in life, and I felt if I'd carried a grudge, it never would have opened up doors later on in my career.
Mm. How did it open up doors later on?
I think it was because I was in one section of the department or the force, and I wanted to do that. Unfortunately, due to my injuries, I was unable to do that particular work for quite some time, so I went into different fields, opened up more doors, gave me more opportunities to try different work, different fields of work, and and now 28 years later, I'm still in the police force. So I could have held a grudge and gone off on work care and everything, very early in my career, but decided to move on and I still talk to that man today.
Fantastic. And I imagine that makes you feel more at peace with yourself and what happened.
Yeah, because you see it with so many other people, they're so, they've got it's like they've got a heavy weight on their shoulders. And I never had that feeling once, because it sort of assisted me by forgiving him straight away.
How did you know to do that then? Do you know, Tony?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How were you capable of that?
I'm not sure. I think it's just, an accident's an accident. It was just an accident and you can live with burden on you, but if you just look at it on the other side, there's always another side. I mean, he was injured too. And you just got to take one day at a time. And I know that's a cliche, but it's true. And then, hopefully everything fixes up. I've been married 26 years, 28 years in the police force, two great kids. And, I feel that maybe if the accident didn't happen, things might have been totally different. I don't know, but maybe it was meant to happen.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you so much. You're listening to Nightlife on ABC Radio. If you've just joined us, Sarah McDonald with you. Patria King is with me. And also, that was Tony on the phone with a terrific story of forgiveness. That's what we're talking about tonight on the show. We also have Dr. Chris Mulheron, Anglican minister and theologian, with us, and we're taking some calls as well. Are there really ever things, Chris, that people do which are truly unforgivable, in your view?
I don't think so, no. But in answering that, I want to make it really, really clear that unforgivable doesn't mean that we don't understand that people have done things wrong. So we're not saying things are justifiable or things are understandable or explainable or that we condone things. There are appalling, appalling things that human beings do, and it's not that we should condone them or understand them or sort of talk them away, but that doesn't mean that they're not forgivable. We forgive people who do appalling things, but we still put them in court and send them to prison. So there are two sides there. There's the sort of legal side and the relationship side.
It can be different to... As opposed to justice, yeah. Patria?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I worked for a couple of years in Long Bay Jail, and one of many years ago, back in the mid-80s when HIV was rampant and there was a lot of fear and they were being very naughty in Long Bay Jail. They'd set fire to the unit and flushing their gear down the toilets and so on, and I was asked to go in and sort it out with a view to then integrating those prisoners into the mainstream jail where they, no one wanted them. But one of the prisoners there, and I didn't really take much notice of their crime because they were everything from a petty thief through to manslaughter and rapists and bank robbers and whatever. But this one gentleman who was always very sweet was a pedophile, and he had lots of T-cells and we weren't worried about his health particularly, where the other prisoners had very few. But suddenly he developed a lymphoma around his spinal cord, and 5 weeks after he developed this, he died at 6 weeks, but at 5 weeks I went out to the jail and the other prisoners had gone completely berserk. They were throwing furniture and one of them was bleeding heavily because he'd put his fist through a window. And anyway, I sorted out that part of it. Then I went out to the hospital to see this man. I'll call him Bruce. It wasn't Bruce, but
yeah.
And I could barely be with him because the men in jail had been talking about his crime, and my son, I think, was about 11 at that time, and that was the age of most of the children whom he'd molested. And I couldn't bear being in his presence. Mm. And I went out a week later, and this was the – he died just after this conversation. And I stood outside his room before I went in and just brought myself into the present. And what I used to do back in those days was imagine I was inside the body of an angel or Jesus or Buddha or some good guy who could look at the world with less judgment than me. And then I went and sat with him and took on his breathing pattern, because that's a really good way to get into the same space as someone who's at the edge of life. And then his head came up and he said, "Can I tell you something?" And out poured this story that he'd never told anyone. He was raised by an alcoholic father who raped and abused him throughout his childhood. His father would bring all of his mates home from the pub and they'd all have a go at Bruce.
Oh, God.
He ran away many, many times and was always returned home by docs. And finally at 11 or 12, he'd run away from home and lived on the streets. And he said as he became older, he found himself following young boys and, if he could, touching them inappropriately. And he spoke all the way through to the present.
Was he seeking? What was he seeking?
No, he
from
just
you?
Needed to tell the story
right.
at this point.
Yeah.
And then he looked me in the eye and he said to Patria, after telling me all the things he'd done right up to the present moment, he looked me in the eye and he said, "But Patria, I've become a Christian and I've asked for forgiveness for what I've done to children and I have accepted it." And there was a part of me that said, "How dare you accept forgiveness?" And I thought, isn't it amazing that there's a part of me that wants this person to suffer forever.
Mm. And not be forgiven.
And not be forgiven. And yet that's the same harsh part of myself that I don't forgive at times. And when I hugged him, I felt that he was as special a being as any. Now, I'm not in any way condoning Bruce's behaviour. He died under guard, exactly where he needed to be. But it is possible to find compassion and understanding of the being who made appalling choices and decisions, and whilst abhorring the behaviour, but still to find love and compassion for the being is always possible.
Chris, and yet I'm sure you'd understand if the mother and those children couldn't forgive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Forgiving and forgetting are two different things, you know. I think you can forgive, and sometimes it's very unwise to forget.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
We have to learn whatever the lesson is in this so that we don't perhaps keep putting ourselves into a circumstance. I'm certainly not talking about children. There's children are the innocent ones. But for ourselves, if we don't learn from these situations where we feel so wounded, we're very likely to stumble into them over and over again.
You're on Nightlife. We're talking about forgiveness. Sue's called in. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Sue.
And Chris, look, I was just mulling on Patria's story about Bruce, which was terrific and heart-rending, and just reinforces the damage that can occur to a child from being abused as a child.
Yes.
That, you know, flows on into adulthood, causing horrific situations. I lost custody of my six-year-old son as a direct consequence of my father generating a situation that, you know, without having lived through it, I would never have believed possible that a parent could do what they did.
Mm.
No. I had to learn to forgive him. For the first 4 years after losing my son, I hated him with such a vengeance. I truly wanted to kill him.
Mm.
I had a situation where I wasn't a Christian at the time. I believed in God, and I had a Bible, and I used to flick it open every so often and read scriptures. But I remember reading once where Jesus said, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing," and he was hanging on the cross dying.
Mm.
And I was reflecting on what had happened in my life and the reasons that, around the circumstances of me losing custody of my son. This was 4 years later, and I suddenly realised that my father didn't know what he had done to me, and so I had to forgive him. The thought of Jesus hanging on the cross and asking God to forgive those who were crucifying him.
Mm. Did you need to tell him what he'd done, though, before you could forgive him, or you didn't need to?
No, it was, you know, I tried to have a conversation, but it was not possible with him. For many years, it was a 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year process until I really, in fact, it was after I became a born-again Christian, I really began to be able to truly find love in my heart for him and compassion. And the forgiveness process took many years, but it reached a point where I had totally and utterly forgiven him before he passed on.
And what did that do for you, Sue?
Oh, it released me enormously.
Yes.
In fact, at the time I realised I had to forgive him, I literally prayed to God to help me to forgive him and to forgive others, but also to forgive myself. And that was the thing I didn't quite understand for years later.
Mm.
But I realised I'd been a totally disempowered person as a consequence of being abused in childhood.
Mm.
And it was a process where, I guess, in the end, I was given revelations, and increasingly as I studied the scriptures, I began to understand more fully why I was, you know, as I was, and why my not only my father, my parents were as they were.
Okay.
And it was because they didn't know the love of God. They didn't know really who they were as a child of God. And it's amazing the negative influences that occur in people's lives when they don't know the source of love. They don't know who they are as a child of God, and they've never really been loved themselves.
Right. Well, Chris, as a minister and a theologian, I'll get you to respond to Sue.
I think that that deep sense of for those who believe in God, God who is the source of all moral right and wrong, that's where we can go to find the forgiveness for what we know about ourselves, which is that we just aren't. We don't make the standards that we wish we could make. We are not perfect. And for those who believe in God, there is a sense that there is a sense of release if you can really believe that the one who made us forgives us for not making that grade.
Okay.
If I could just add there, I think it's also the knowledge of God that helps bring the healing, because that was the thing that helped me to move on when I came to understand that through forgiveness and asking God to help me to continue to grow in that healing process,
yes,
forgiveness became less of an effort.
All right. Yeah.
Yep. More of a reality.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks so much for your call. Mm. Patria, do you find that when you work with people, those who do have faith find it easier to forgive? Does it help?
Not always. You know, I think one of the great benefits of religion is that forgiveness is usually very much talked about, and so that's a great thing. Personally, I was born Jewish, raised an Anglican, spent time in a Catholic monastery and probably am more Buddhist than anything, but I don't have any religion, and I do believe that God resides within all human beings, and I don't think of it as, you know, God, life and love to me are all exactly the same things, and that's what impels and infuses all of us, and that it is second nature. It does become second nature to us to feel separate from and different from and less than others. But if we really get that the consciousness that enlivens you is the same consciousness that enlivens me, that enlivens all of creation, then how could I do to you what I wouldn't do to myself?
So we're all capable of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
I'll just quickly go to Kieran before we finish the calls and we'll ask a few more questions of you both. Hello, Kieran.
Oh, g'day, mate. How are you going?
Good.
Hi, Kieran.
To Patria, there's so much to talk about there. It's sort of like, you know, Buddhism. I just had my sister down. Like, she calls me a confused drunken Buddhist. It's quite funny. Just laugh, you know. Like,
anyway, you got done over by someone in business, yeah?
Yeah, I did. I did, you know, by a friend. And, like, And I was like, and I won't mention the name of like a major little trade place.
Yeah.
The other day, and I seen this person, and I just looked at him and I just went, I just sucked in a big, deep breath and just went, ha, I forgive you.
Really? So when you saw him, you got to the point where you could forgive him.
For her, yeah.
Her.
Stole my whole business idea and never even
really?
Far.
Mm.
No, I don't want to go into it. You know,
yeah. But what went on in that moment when you saw her and went, up? Oh, I forgive you.
Well, I had a young lady that was helping me doing some work, you know, and I just looked and just went, ah. You know, it's sort of like, I forgive you.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't tell her, but she could tell.
Yeah.
She looked at me, you know, like, and, you know, we were like, probably, I don't know, 100 metres away, and I just went, ah.
So you didn't need to tell her. You weren't doing it for her. You were doing it for you.
Probably for me. Because I'd already sent a message to her, so like, I forgive, but this is the thing, I sent a message, I forgive, but I don't forget.
Yeah, very sensible. Next time, have it in writing and have a legal agreement between you and the other person. And from that, you learn.
I've just started the business on that, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm going on about this. Like, I just looked around and just went,
I love the that goes with it. All right, good on you, Kieran.
Good on, guys. Thanks for
your call. Great to hear it. Chris, what about the actions of on a grand scale when it's governments or states, you know, sort of genocide and the Holocaust and you know, frontier war violence against Indigenous people? It's a different nature of forgiveness when you feel others are affected or if you're a part of that group or observing it from afar. What role does forgiveness have in large-scale acts of brutality?
Well, I guess the way I think about it is that those large-scale acts are still acts by human actors, and there are human actors involved that are liable, who are very, very guilty. There are others who are more caught up in the process and not so guilty, perhaps. So once again, forgiveness, the relationship side of things, and also the legal side of things, boils down to dealing with each individual actor. Now, I'm not sure if that's the direction of the question, but that's the way I would see it.
Mm. But here often reconciliation is very powerful. Like in South Africa, they had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It was an enormously powerful and important institutional reaction to the end of apartheid, wasn't it?
And it depends on a very clear sense of justice, doesn't it? It's not sweeping justice under the carpet. It's not saying these actions have not been appalling actions. Mm. It's not condoning actions, but it is saying even when justice is done, either you can move forward in a more healed way, or you can move forward. Even having had justice, that still doesn't satisfy our desire for revenge. If we're going to go down the road of revenge, no amount of so-called justice will satisfy that desire. The only way of dealing with that sort of attitude is, once justice has been done, to also go down the road of forgiveness.
Mm, absolutely. And I think, you know, when we've been the perpetrator of something that's wounded another, you know, that when we do ask for forgiveness, it's not just a flippant thing. We need to hear the pain of the other. And I think that's why the Truth and Reconciliation and such events are so important, because we actually bear witness to the anguish that we have caused in another. And I think until we do that in Australia and we actually hear the anguish, we have no idea of the anguish and the grief that we've caused the First Nation people of Australia. Yes. And until we can stand and bear to hear the consequences of our actions, and to then make recompense in a way that's actually meaningful, I think that's a process that we have only really scratched the surface, and we haven't gone anywhere deeper. And the only, you know, the thing that reminded me is when farmers have someone come onto their land looking for gas, and they have no sense of being able to shut these people out, because this is my land, it's my country. I think for the first time, perhaps we had a taste of only the most tiniest taste of what happened for Indigenous people, because they belong to the land. You cannot pick them up, move them somewhere else and expect them to be happy. It doesn't work that way. They had a deep sense of interconnectedness that I think we only just began to understand when people started walking onto properties looking for minerals and gas underneath the land on which we thought we owned.
And that's a warning against cheap forgiveness, isn't it? It's a warning against the sort of soz. You don't just say soz. Yeah. Oh, well, that's a shame. Let's move on.
Yes.
The voice of the marginalised or the victim has to be heard properly.
Yes,
before you can go
to the
next
stage. Well, it's interesting. There's a long text that's come in, actually, from Emma, and I won't read it all, but it's a complex situation. She says, as a Christian, she's finding it very hard to forgive someone when there's an ongoing situation and she hasn't had redress and it keeps going on with someone. There's no apology, no request for forgiveness, and it's ongoing that's messing up her life, and she's really struggling with it. Because there's sort of it keeps going.
Yes.
So
could I just say something about that?
Yes, please. Love you to.
Within Christian circles, there can sometimes be a confusion between the call to forgiveness and the call to redress situations. And just because Christians are called to forgive, it doesn't mean that we're not called to sort out situations. And it's the call to forgiveness and the call to serve one another, for example, in Christian circles, is not an excuse for people to abuse other people and say, you must serve me, you have to forgive me for the things I do to you.
Yeah, there still needs to be accountability. That's right.
Accountability and redressing and dealing with situations rather than sweeping them under the carpet in the name of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd say to Emma, you know, forgiveness is a journey for a lot of people, and it's not as simple as I forgive you. And there may very well be the necessity for putting things in place, certainly to make sure you're safe, certainly to make sure that you are not abused in some way, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's through bullying, whether it's in the family. I can't tell you the number of people who come on our retreats to sort out issues of forgiveness, because I think the best definition I ever heard of forgiveness was from a 6'5" transsexual in a frock who stood up at a conference in San Francisco and said, "I've just realized that forgiveness is giving up all hope for a better past." And I thought that was absolutely spot on. It just is.
And what's the power of it, giving hope for a better future?
Well, we might need to weep about it, rail about it, scream about it, write about it, talk about it until we get to the place where we say, that did happen and it happened to me, but I refuse to continue living with the woundedness of what happened. Mm. I'm putting it to rest because then I can focus on the future. I can focus on the present. I can focus on the loving relationships that I do have in my life rather than rehashing the story. But if you're living in the midst of an ongoing situation, Emma, then you may very well need to find tools and strategies that will help you to remain in good heart and in good cheer whilst not being taken advantage of.
Yeah. And Chris, where do you see the power of forgiveness to finish up?
I guess I would say the power of forgiveness is where we started. It's in mending relationships. It's in making relationships. It's making it possible to go on. And it doesn't mean we're going to have the same relationship we had with people before, but it is letting go in the sense that we're able to move forward.
Yeah.
And then finally, the most powerful Christian answer to the question is it mends our relationship with God through God, through Jesus doing the work that makes it possible for us to live in relationship with the Creator.
All right. I thank you both so much for your time tonight. Been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Sarah.
I like the idea of that you get better at it too, right?
Just take
step one, build up
the
muscle of forgiveness almost. We've been talking to Dr. Chris Mulheron, Anglican minister and theologian from Melbourne, and Patria King, CEO and founder of the Quest for Life Centre, which is in Bundanoon in New South Wales, and author. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On ABC Radio, it's Nightlife with Sarah McDonald.